Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Missouri River Energy Services, proud energy partner with municipal electric utilities in western Minnesota, Iowa, and the Dakotas.
6 minutes now past 12. And good afternoon. Welcome back to a special edition of Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us with Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, Mike Mulcahy, at the Science Museum. We are focusing today on Governor Jesse Ventura's budget proposal. Last hour, as you heard, the governor presented the broad outlines of his budget in an address at the Science Museum. And this hour, he is joining Mike at our broadcast site at the Science Museum for a half hour or so to talk some more about his budget and also to take your questions. So if you have a question about the budget for the governor, give us a call here. Our Twin City area number, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Governor Ventura, glad you could join us today. And Mike, why don't you get us started here?
Hi, Gary. How are you today?
Just fine.
Good.
Well, maybe I can ask a question, Governor, as long as I'm sitting here with you. I don't know if you saw in the Minneapolis paper over the weekend.
No, I try not to read the papers
anymore. Well, there were a couple editorial writers in there who have been writing a series of articles. They say that you've already done two big tax rebates, and Minnesota now is dropping out of the top 10 in some of the other tax rankings.
Mm-hmm.
And they say this great economy, it's been going so good, and it might not last forever. Why not take some money now and make some major spending in areas like education or roads or arts or something like that?
Well, and certainly you have that available to do so, but my viewpoint very clearly is in my first 2 years in office, we've had growth of about 13% in 2 years, permanent.
In spending?
Permanent. And that's permanent growth. That's enlarging the government by 13%, bigger. Well, that's like a mutual fund, and I don't think government should grow at the level of a mutual fund. I think it should grow at the level more of when you have that savings account at the bank, and we all know that doesn't grow at that level. So I felt very strongly that for my 4 years here in office, that 13% growth over 2 years, well, if I continued with that, that would be 26% over my watch. That would be government would grow a quarter of what it is now, larger. That's unacceptable to me, and that was my priority. And certainly we can take 2 years and limit the growth of government. There's no law that says government has to grow to the extent that it was growing just because economic times are good. Because remember this, if you increase permanent spending, you have to continue to pay for that even when economic times are not good. That spending will still be there. So it's easy to do that. That would be the easy way out. I felt the difficult way and the real way of showing responsibility was not to go on a spending spree just because economic times are good. And as we see now, all indications are the economy is slowing down.
Governor, it sounds to me like the real key to the whole budget here is the broadening of the sales tax. If the legislature, which doesn't seem to be too keen on the idea, doesn't go along with you on that, does the whole house of cards kind of collapse here in terms of
not
changing property taxes and all of the rest of it?
Well, it certainly is going to play a huge role. There's no doubt about it. But I think you're being premature in saying that the legislature somehow is not too keen on the idea. I've been assured by the leadership on both sides that they are going to give my tax proposal a full reading. Now, let me put it to you like this. If you knit a sweater and you pull a thread out at certain points of that sweater, well, pretty soon the arm falls off and it's no longer a sweater. You have to view and look at it in the whole picture. And I've been assured by leadership in both the House and the Senate that they will indeed take that look at the whole big picture. The end result is this. Every Minnesotan in Minnesota will have more money and pay less taxes through my budget. It's just the rearranging. Now is the time to do tax reform. And there's another reason we need to step forward and do it, especially in the sales tax arena. Right when the sales tax was implemented back in the 60s, we were 60% goods, 40% services. We have now flip-flopped as an economy. Today we are 60% services, 40% goods. We've got to modernize with the times. Plus, we have to get past the hurdle of the internet. Last year at the NGA, the National Governors Association, that was the number one priority of business. What are states going to do about the sales on the internet? Everyone agrees that we don't want to tax the internet or tax the use of the internet, but certainly when there are transactions going on of people buying and selling over the internet, and remember, this new generation that is coming up now is going to use the internet even more than what us internet stupid people who barely know how to use it can do it. You have a generation coming up that the internet is so natural to them, it's like turning on a TV set for us, or the radio for that matter. Well, the state of Tennessee has already done preliminary studies and found out they've lost $140 million in transaction sales tax because of the internet. Now, what that means is that your local USA out there on Main Street USA is going to be suffering from lack of those tax dollars. We've got to set up a system with our sales tax to where we can recover the money that we need to be able to recover by using the sales tax. Plus, personally, I am a huge advocate of the sales tax. I believe we should have a national sales tax and get rid of the income tax nationally.
Now, Governor, I know you don't have a lot of time, and I do want to get to a couple of quick calls here from listeners. They've got questions for you, but one last question from us, if you would, please. There was a lot of talk that you were going to include in your budget a plan whereby metro area residents would be able to vote to keep the sales tax at its current level, and then the extra money would go to a big transit fund. Why did you decide not to include that?
How do you know I did? That's just the media reporting on what they perceive as a leak. They have no way of knowing whether that was included or not included. That's just media creating stories, doing their job, creating the news.
So that never was really under consideration?
If it was or wasn't, it's not now, so it's irrelevant.
Okay. Patricia, your question for the governor?
Hello.
Yes, you're on air.
Hi, this is Patricia. I'm in Minneapolis, and I'm concerned about those 6,000 homeless children in the metro area and the need for 38,000 affordable housing units. I know that the governor was very successful last year in passing some funds for some housing, but I'm concerned that we're still not there yet.
Well, again, we need help from the private sector, too. This can't be just look to the government to find your answers, because the government should not be charity necessarily. Yes, we allocated over $73 million to affordable housing last year, the largest that had been allocated in decades. We've added an additional million. We've added an additional $24 million to this budget.
Governor, we had some educators on a few days ago, and they were saying that just to kind of get up to speed on K-12 education, they were looking for, or hoping anyway, for an increase in education spending of about 10% on that per pupil formula, as it's called. Your budget is substantially smaller than that. Don't you think you're squeezing education a little bit too much?
Well, we gave them $1.3 billion in my last budget. It was the largest single spending item in that budget. That $1.3 billion doesn't disappear. That carries over to this budget also. And certainly, if you listen to all the educators, there isn't enough money we could give them. We could turn the entire budget over to them, and they probably would still say it wasn't enough. Not to downplay their needs, they certainly have them, no doubt about it. But you have to use, you have to set up your priorities, and this is not a wish list where everyone gets everything they wish, because if it were down to that, Gary, we wouldn't have enough money to go around.
Bobby, your question for the governor.
Good afternoon, Governor.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to say, first of all, I think your whole tax proposal is wonderful.
Thank you.
I've heard since I've been working, able to work anyway.
Sure.
Second of all, the reason I voted for you is because you're not dictated by special interest groups or, all that, basically special interest groups. Could you tell me a little bit more about the lobbyists and special interest groups and how they play so much part in government?
Well, they're hired by interest out there, out in the community, depending on what that interest is, whether it's K through 12 or whatever their special interest is. They are professional people who are hired to come over to the Capitol, bend the ear of legislators, tell them how important it is that they get theirs, and that's essentially what they do. And the situation with me is The nice thing is I don't take any special interest money. I never did to get elected. In fact, we got elected on so little bit of money that basically if you gave me $50, that's about the interest you'll have with me, and $50 doesn't buy you too much interest over there, because that's the basic number that I got to get elected. So I try to make judgments based upon what's best for the state of Minnesota as a whole, and not base it upon special interest people bending my ear, telling me, you know, you've got to do this for me because I contributed so much to your campaign, you know, which is basically what it all comes down to. And usually they cover both sides of the street. You know, they'll contribute to the Republican campaigns. They'll contribute to the Democratic campaigns. And when you do that to a certain level, then you got both your bases covered. So you're, to use the term, you're in like Flint then. But in my case, they don't have that luxury because none of them paid to get me elected. So none of them paid to have my ear. Certainly I listen to their ear, though. And don't get me wrong, I'm not anti-total lobbyists. I think sometimes they can come up with some brilliant ideas, and we certainly should give them their due to listen to them. But as far as owing them anything, I don't owe them anything, so I can clearly make decisions based upon whatever I feel.
Governor, one thing that was lobbied quite a bit at the Capitol is this CrimNet program. It's a plan to link together all the police agencies around the state.
Yep.
They were asking for $41 million, and you gave them 27. Well, how come not the whole amount?
Well, because, you know, things tend to get inflated that way. This will put them back, and you know, they'll be very fiscally conservative then, if we want to say that, and putting it together, and they'll do it without hopefully any bad spending involved. And I support that because it's part of government's job to provide for the public safety. And that's a role we should be playing as government. Again, my view of government is simple. Government should do for you what you're unable to do for yourself.
And you think they can do it, though, with the lesser amount of money, just cut, make it more efficient?
I think that most all government projects are a little inflated. You know, everyone has a wish list. They aim high. And then it's cut back later, you know, when they find out what the actual cost of it'll be. And if more is needed, well, certainly more can be appropriated if it's deemed necessary. Let's see what they do with the 27 and then judge from that point.
Dee's on the line from Mankato with a question for the governor. Go ahead, Dee.
Hi, Governor. I like you. I think you're the best governor we had. I voted for you. I saw you at a campaign thing 2 days before the election. I have a couple questions, and they both go to health care. One, I like your budget thing, but I'm concerned about the nursing home thing.
Well,
cutting down their spending.
We're not cutting down their spending.
Well,
we're
staff.
We're trying to shift it to more home-based. We're trying to give the local communities more resources so that the elderly can stay at home longer and be cared for at a local level better.
I understand that, but I used to work in one, and the people who are there can't take care of themselves, and those places are so understaffed the way it is that I was just wondering. I had a question about that.
Well, and that's why we're going to the local, because there is such problems in the nursing homes. Maybe it's best we take a new approach to care of the elderly by keeping them home longer, by providing at the local level so that when they need care, it can be provided at the local level rather than institutionalizing them.
Okay.
My father went into one, and I swore I'd never allow my mother to go into one.
Well, I know. I've had grandparents and stuff in them, too, and I swear to God I won't let my husband in one.
And the reason
I won't is because they're so understaffed that
when I worked there,
I was giving a patient a bath, and she wanted to spend time with me, and I got yelled at for it, and I'm thinking that's not good.
All right.
Well, and that's what we're attempting to do. We're attempting to make it more community-oriented rather than institutionalized.
Marcia, you're up next. Go ahead, please.
Governor, this is Marcia in St. Paul.
Hi, Marcia.
You mentioned in the discussion of the sales tax in your speech this morning that you apparently are considering a sales tax on memberships at WISE and similar organizations. I work with a lot of charities, and I'm wondering if there are other proposals in your tax proposal or your budget that would increase taxes to charities, to nonprofits across the state of Minnesota.
No, I don't believe it will. What we're looking at is fairness in life out there. And when you've got one place has to, like the examples that I made, a lady took her dog and herself out She had to pay a sales tax to get her dog's hair cut, but she didn't have to on hers. And that's what's unequitable about the whole sales tax in the state of Minnesota when it deals with services. If you cut down a tree, there's a tax. If you plant a tree, there's not. And what we're looking to do is simply to make it fair to where we're not picking winners and losers here, and to where it's not based upon who has the strongest lobbying power over at the Capitol. Because that's what it seems to be based upon, is that, you know, if you got powerful lobbying at the Capitol, then your service isn't taxed. But if you don't have that, then your service is taxed. And I just believe that, especially in light, I'm a great believer in the sales tax because you choose to pay it. You choose to pay it by the lifestyle you live, because we're not taxing the necessities of life. Food, clothing, heating oil will not be subjected to a sales tax. But everything else on a sales tax, you choose to pay it because you choose to purchase what you purchase. And I'm a believer that we should go to a national sales tax and fully eliminate the income tax.
Some people say, though, Governor, that the income tax is more fair because as your income goes up, you have more of an ability to pay, whereas if you're paying the sales tax and you're lower income, it's going to take a greater percentage of your total
that,
money.
That may be true, but you generally don't buy as big then either, do you? You know, if you don't have a big income, you don't make high item purchases, mm-hmm. because you have to live within the budget of your means, where if you do make big money, you'll buy those big item purchases, and subsequently you'll pay a heck of a lot more sales tax. We base our entire sales tax rebate based upon that. We know that people at lower income will not purchase as much as people at a higher income do. But you must remember also, too, that in the income tax, the majority of the income tax is paid by your high wage earners. They're paying the majority of the tax. So therefore, they deserve an equal cut, too, when there's a cut in taxes. You can't just cut it at certain places and not, to be fair, cut it across the board, in my opinion. You cut it across the board.
Governor, transportation. There have been several suggestions at the Capitol that the state should significantly increase the amount that it's spending on transportation issues. It sounds like you're just basically proposing a hold-the-line budget in transportation, right?
Well, last year I submitted a complete budget that would have paid for transportation for the next 10 years. That budget was rejected. That proposal was rejected. And they did $400 million of one-time spending. So I felt it must not be that big of a priority then if they rejected it last year. So if there's going to be a transportation package put together, the legislature will do it.
Mm-hmm. And if they sent it to you, would you consider it?
I'll consider anything they send to me.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. But, we submitted last year. If they'd have accepted our proposal last year, we wouldn't even have to deal with it this year. It would have been fully accepted, implemented, and it would cover the next decade, the next 10 years of creating roads, creating transportation choices, all of it across the line. But they chose to ignore it last year and do one-time spending.
Bob, your question for the governor, please.
Hi, Governor.
Hi, Bob.
When you always want to cut back the budget of the University of Minnesota, when they are such a great, have such a great impact on our economy. The professors alone brought in over $340 million last year for research they pumped into our economy. A new AIDS drug they developed over $300 million into the economy. Why do you want to keep cutting them back so much?
We're not cutting them back. We're adding to them. I have not cut back the University of Minnesota. I've added to it. They're not cut back. It's just that they give you a wish list. If they got everything they wanted, probably 30% of my budget would go to them. And so I'm not able to do that. In fact, if you look at the capital bonding, the way I do that, I have the university give me a list of what's their number one priority through number 10. And we fund one down to where we think we can. But they provide that list. I don't make the call. I don't pick the winner and loser over there. And we are funding them. We're not cutting them. We're funding them.
And it sounds like you are adding some money to the Academic Health Center.
Yes, we are. We're gonna use the last tobacco endowment, and we're gonna invest that, and the profits made from that will go to the Academic Health Center at the University of Minnesota.
Governor, you mentioned the capital bonding bill. You'd like the legislature to get all this done in 1 year. How important is that to you? Normally, in recent years, the capital requests would be dealt with next year. You want it all done this year. How critical?
No, they're not, Gary. They've been doing it every year. Both years I've been in office now, both years that I've gone through a legislative session, they have done both budget and capital bonding both years. So my view is if they can do them all in both years, see, the difficulty in having them come back every year is that they reopen the budget then, and you end up with more spending happens. And that's how come we reached that 13% over 2 years. So if they can do all the capital bonding in 1 year, sign-y-die, go home. They can spend next year planting fields, going fishing. Heck, they can join me on the fishing opener. They won't be in session. So I'll invite them all with.
But if not, you're going to veto whatever they do pass?
No, I'll veto bonding, and then they can come back and do all the bonding the following year like they're supposed to. So the call is theirs.
Okay. What are your plans, Governor? I understand you're going to be traveling the state now to try to rally some support for your budget?
Well, we're going to travel the state really to educate on the budget. It's a case where we have to get out there, and, you know, the media doesn't always report accurately. They don't always get into the details of it. So I think it's important for us to go out there and answer people's questions and let people understand the big picture of what we're trying to accomplish here, rather than pulling out just little sound bites, which is what will happen, and then people read headlines and panic. They need to look and be educated on the entire budget. What the entire thing does, and the bottom line is this. When it's all said and done, yes, we reform taxes. Yes, we give tax relief. The bottom line, end all, to my budget is every Minnesotan will pay less in taxes, and their cost of government will go down over the next 5 years. What out of $1, if they're paying 16 cents out of that dollar to government, that will be dropping every year for the next five years down the line of what you will pay for government services.
Well, Governor, I'd like to thank you for joining us today and taking some listener questions. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Gary. Thank you.
Good talking with you.
Hey, by the way,
yes.
Gary,
yes.
By the way, just FYI,
uh-huh.
I did two XFL games this weekend, and nobody even knew it, did they?
Exhibition games? Practice games?
Yes. I flew out of town and did two of them this weekend, and there wasn't a soul in the media or anyone else that even knew about it, and it didn't affect my job one bit.
Oh, and with that, the governor is done, Gary.
Minnesota Public Radio's Mike Mulcahy at our Science Museum location. Governor Ventura joining us. And
I guess he just can't help but make a little news for us.
Well, no, that's an interesting tidbit to stew about.
Yeah.
Must have had some practice run-throughs. The season, as I understand it, Mike, I think starts February 3rd, the week after the Super Bowl. So.
Right, February 3rd, Saturday night. That's the governor's first broadcast. I think it's the... I can't remember the teams. I think it's the Hitmen versus the, somebody else in Las Vegas.
Now, we should remind everybody, Mike, that for folks who want to really pour through the details of the governor's budget, there is lots of information available on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. There are charts and graphs and lots and lots of numbers, so you can take a closer look. It's always so hard to digest these budgets in one sitting because... they cover, 27 billion worth of spending, and so there's a lot to talk about. We are going to be speaking here in a few minutes with legislative leaders Steve Swigum and Roger Moe to get their reactions to the governor's budget. But, Mike, you've certainly spent more than your share of time up at the state capitol covering legislators and the like. Any red flags that you've heard in the governor's budget where legislators are going to say, no, there's absolutely no way we're not going to do that?
Well, I don't know about that, Gary, but I mean the controversial part of the budget is still this tax plan to shift the burden for education entirely away from the property taxes and onto a revamped sales tax. I mean, that seems like the most controversial part. And then if it were just that would be one thing, but then he's also got this income tax cut, which brings a whole another level of controversy to it among different legislators. And most people are saying that this thing has to pass as one big package, or as the governor said, once you start pulling threads out of it, the whole thing would have a tendency to unravel. So that's definitely the biggest thing to chew on. And then I also thought it was interesting that the governor did throw out that bonding bill today, too, and say, you know, pass this too this year and you'll be all done, as if they needed any more work to do after they get done with this budget.
Do you think they'll, is it possible that they can do all of that in one session and actually finish up all their work in one year?
I would doubt it. You'll have to ask your other guests here this morning as we go on here, but I would doubt that they will do this bonding bill this year.
Mm-hmm. Now, education, we were talking with Education Commissioner Christine Jacks a little earlier, and of course that makes up a full third of the state's budget in terms of spending. Not a lot of money, new money for education.
No, I think what we heard the governor say was they did get the $1.3 billion last year, and that's built into the base this year, so that money will still keep coming. I think what you've seen is what you see from most governors after they've been around for a while, at least in my experience, which is not all that great, but eventually they come to see the amount of money that is being spent on education and see the requests that are out there. And as the governor said, you could put all the money into education and still some people would say it isn't enough. And it seems like eventually just about every governor I've covered has come to the conclusion that there has to be some kind of accountability for all this money going in, and there has to be a way to change this system and to make the money work. And, of course, the educators keep coming back and saying we have new challenges every year. So that's a very difficult one, but this budget definitely does seem to hold the line on K through 12 education.
Now, educate us, if you can, a little bit, Mike, as to how the legislative process works now. I mean, they have all their little committees, or big committees, as it were, talking about smaller parts of this budget, and yet it is, as you know, especially the tax parts of it, are all kind of interconnected. They're all interwoven, and if you start picking at one part in Committee A, pretty soon the ground shifts under Committee B. Is the legislature in a position to deal with a kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, a holistic budget like this?
Sort of a global solution like
this?
Yes. That's a very good question. I mean, basically what we've got here today is the governor's speech and a 70-page document that kind of lays out some of these plans. And of course, that will turn into thousands of pages of bills as these various proposals are introduced to the legislature. And then the legislative committees go through literally line by line of the bills to try to figure out just how this is all going to work. So it's an enormous job they have to do. And eventually, there's been a lot of talk about the committee chairs and the conference committees and how much power they have. Eventually, it does come down to a few people making some of these big decisions. And that's the way that they do make it manageable. It's impossible to predict what will happen, and I wouldn't want to even try to do that. But I think maybe one advantage the governor has here is that some of these proposals have been around for a while, even though this is the first time that he's introduced them and the first time that they're coming together in one package. Certainly some of these concepts have been around in various forms over the past many years. And so I think some of the players, the big players at the Capitol, are at least familiar enough with those sorts of things to know what is there, but they also do want to hear from the public and see if there are better ideas out there and see what to do next. They always say that the governor gets most of what he asks for. This year, I don't know. He's asking for them to do a lot of work here.
Minnesota Public Radio's political editor Mike Mulcahy is with us. He's over at the Science Museum, where Governor Ventura has presented his budget, his two-year budget plan for the state of Minnesota. And we are expecting to talk here momentarily with Republican House Speaker Steve Swigum, also DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe, to get their reaction to the governor's budget. And just a reminder, if you would like to pore through some of the details of the budget, the place to check is our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. Lots of information about the budget on our website. Also, if you'd like more information about becoming a member of Minnesota Public Radio, give us a call at 1-800-227-2811. We thank you for your continued support. We should remind you as well that programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Blake School, celebrating 100 years of excellence and anticipating the next century of our work with children. Mike Mulcahy, as we wait for Speaker Swigum to join us, the governor now is going to go out and about and try to educate Minnesotans, as he put it, about the purpose, the goals of his budget. How important is that public sales job in terms of getting the legislators to support his programs? Does that make a big difference?
Well, from what we've been hearing, it makes a huge difference. Basically, I think what legislators have seen is that the governor has been unable to translate his whopping job approval ratings into a way to really get his programs passed at the Capitol. And so he does need public support. And I think what you've seen up until now is people saying, if nothing else, confused a little bit by this plan. I think a lot of people, when they first heard the news stories of it, thought that the governor was going to be taking money, spending state money on education, and then taking more money from the sales tax and spending it on education. It didn't add up, and a lot of people have said that he hasn't really proven to people that there's a huge crisis out there that demands this kind of change. And of course, what the governor is saying is that you would take the money off the property taxes, that the 100% cost of education would be paid for by other state taxes, and so people would see a huge property tax cut, as well as this expansion of the sales tax to these services. And even though the governor has anecdotes to talk about the services, you know, the dog haircuts and the horse stabling and all that, he hasn't really put out a specific list of exactly what would be covered by this new sales tax. And I would imagine that would have to be in the bill that eventually comes before the tax committees in the House and Senate. But so there's still a little bit of confusion there, and I don't think the budget today is going to clear that up. And that makes legislators a little more nervous about it. So back to your question a half hour ago, the governor's going out to Duluth tomorrow afternoon, and he'll be in Worthington and then Austin later in the week. And I think he really does have to go and start giving some speeches to people in their communities about this and tell them why this is important to do and why this really makes a difference for them.
Well, Mike, we've been joined now by DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe. Senator Moe, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Gary. It's nice to be with all of you.
Are you pleased as punch with the governor's, the broad outlines of the governor's proposal?
Well, that's probably not quite the way I would put it, but I will acknowledge that the governor has thrown out and asked us to look at some very interesting tax issues and suggests to us that we should look at these reforms, and all I can say is that we will do that. We will treat it as a serious effort on his part. We will live within the administration's numbers, I can guarantee them that, and that in the final analysis, when we're all done, we will have both tax relief and tax reform will have passed the Senate. I think our major concerns at this stage, and again, I think Mike was explaining that right now all we've got is this executive budget summary document. We don't have the budget books yet, and as the old saying goes, the devil is in the details. But right now, our major concerns would be to use a word that probably is overused, but it's very important to use these words, and it's balance, balance, balance. Our balance would be balanced in terms of a sustainable tax cut with the kinds of investments that are important, particularly in education, environment, natural resources, transportation, and health initiatives. A balance on the tax side, making sure that all taxpayers benefit, not just some, not just a few, making sure that everybody gets an equitable portion of the tax relief. Balance there. And then balance on the expenditure side, making sure that all areas of the state are included in this. We are one state, and I want to quickly point out that this state of the state, which is often painted as very rosy, is not the state of the economy in some regions of Minnesota.
Senator, is it fair to say that you personally find the governor's budget to be weighted too heavily toward tax cuts and not does not include enough in terms of new spending on critical programs?
Well, as I said, there will be tax cuts. There will be tax relief. There's no doubt about that. We will argue over the size, and we will argue over the kinds of tax cuts but there's no doubt that there will be tax relief. So that is not that's not even a debatable point. The governor has indicated that this budget reflects what the taxpayers want. And so all I can say at this stage of the game is that we will give the taxpayers of Minnesota every opportunity to tell us that what he has in his budget document is exactly what they want. I think there are some areas that initially I must confess to being somewhat concerned about, but I don't know all of the details. In those areas, for instance, in his executive budget summary, he has areas, for instance, like transportation, where it actually, he reduces the budget from this budget to the upcoming one. And environment and natural resources, the general fund actually goes down as well in the upcoming biennium. And in economic development funding, it actually goes down. So there are some areas that, if you'll just look at the summary, you might be, you might wonder what's all going on. But I don't have enough detail to know whether or not that can be justified. So we will give the taxpayers of this state every opportunity. And I want to encourage all the listeners here to get a copy of the budget documents, go through it, take a look at where he's proposing the tax changes and how he's proposing it, and trading that off against the expenditure side. And from that, we will get a good sense of whether or not this reflects Minnesota's values and where Minnesota wants to be, or whether or not we have to offer some constructive alternatives.
Just looking at his tax proposals for a moment, Senator, he's indicated that he sees this as one as a complete package, that if you start picking at this part or that part, there apparently has been some reservations expressed about broadening the sales tax, for example. Well, if he's arguing that if you don't do that, then you don't have the money you need to shift the school funding off the property tax to state coffers, and you don't have enough money to finance an income tax cut and the rest. He wants this addressed as a full package. Do you think realistically the legislature would approach it in that way, or would they focus on each element of his tax program?
No, we will look at it in total, I think the governor is correct in framing it that way, but he also understands that there's, 201 legislators, there's two houses, there's the political parties will all have their different ideas about all of this in responding to what our constituents tell us. But he is right. You can't cut the income tax the way he's suggesting it unless you broaden the sales tax and raise revenue from the sales tax like he's suggesting. All of these things are linked, and so if you automatically just coming right out of the chute, so to speak, on this budget, and you say, we support the across-the-board income tax cuts, but we're against the sales tax expansion, well, then you've automatically limited yourself as to what you can do, and that's why we are not doing that. We are simply saying we will give the administration every opportunity in committee to explain how these things are linked, why it makes sense for this state as we move from now and into the future, and then we will trade that testimony off against taxpayers, and we will listen to them, and if they say, you bet the governor's program here makes a lot of sense, and you bet we're ready to go with it, then obviously that's going to have a big influence on us.
Senator, the one criticism, even in advance of the governor's budget, just based mostly on his State of the State comments, was that he really needs to put more money, the state needs to put more money into some critical areas, long-term investments. But the governor just a few minutes ago was arguing, goodness gracious, state spending has skyrocketed just in the 2 years he's been in office, and if that trend were to continue, I think he was arguing that the size of state government would increase 25% just in 4 years while he was in office. Does he stand on good ground when he makes that argument?
Well, let me just point out, you got to be a little cautious with numbers, because people like to kind of play games sometimes. And I did ask the governor about that this morning, and they had to confess that how they used their numbers was not an apples-to-apples comparison. For instance, the governor loves to talk about the fact that we overspent the last 2 years. He said you had an increase of 16% in expenditures. Well, in that 16% increase was tax relief. It was the property tax relief as well as cutting the license tab tax. So he treats that 16% that includes tax reductions as spending. But then he turns around and talks about this budget and says his budget is only going to go up now 5.2 or 4%. But there he doesn't include the spending on the property tax relief to fully fund schools, nor does he include the shift on the further reduction in the license tab. So I just think that that's not being very fair with the general public in terms of being honest and straightforward. So I think it's important to point that out. You should have an apples-to-apples comparison. Secondly, on the investment side, why do you think I've suggested that we maybe take a second look at the rebate and take those resources and invest them? And maybe there are some things that we could use the interest earnings off of, transportation initiatives, things like that, that are very important to the state. So I think that there, within this budget, I think there's some flexibility that we can hopefully offer some constructive alternatives.
Senator, this is Mike Mulcahy. The governor today also put out a $500 million capital improvements budget and said the legislature should finish up with that this year and you could take next year off. Would that be any possibility you could do that as well as trying to digest this big budget proposal?
Well, as you know, both the House and the Senate have a capital investment committee or the infrastructure committee, and I would guess that both those committees will be taking a look at what the governor is recommending as well as others. We can't just assume that his recommendations are the only ones. Mm-hmm. And you know, we'll take his suggestion serious. I think I would treat it about as seriously as he treated the question at the press conference. He didn't seem to view that all as a kind of a serious offer on his part, and I guess that's how we will treat it.
Thank you, Senator. He also, one more question. He also said, he told us right as he was leaving that he had actually gone out and done two practice XFL games this week when nobody knew about it. What do you think about that?
That's exactly what he told me in one of the meetings. I would guess that what he's doing is he is preparing for his responsibilities that will be taking his weekends from now for the next 10 weeks.
Thanks, Senator. Yes. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe joining us as we talk about the governor's budget that he presented earlier today at the Science Museum. Mike Mulcahy, Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, is with us from the Science Museum. And joining us now from the Capitol is House Speaker Steve Swigum. Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker.
Good afternoon, Gary, Mike.
We were under the impression that you folks, Republicans, would be a lot happier with the governor's budget outline than the DFL. Are we right about that?
Well, I think that's certainly correct. Looking at the budget that the governor is bringing forward today, and of course, you know, very honestly, Gary, Mike, as you know, it's probably going to take us a couple of weeks to sift through everything and find out where everything is shifted to hid, what may be totally in the budget. But on its surface, I think it's a budget that we're going to be able to work with within the Minnesota House. I think on its surface, it's a budget which recognizes taxpayers, reduces the tax burden, and tries to hold the state spending into more of a line of an inflation increase as opposed to larger increases of the past year.
Mr. Speaker, the governor has talked about his tax plan as being one big package, really, and that you start picking at this part and this part and the whole thing collapses. I know you folks have expressed some serious reservations about broadening the sales tax. If you don't go along with that, does in fact the rest of his plan to shift school funding away from the property tax and cut income tax rates, does the rest of his plan fall apart too?
Well, I wouldn't say it falls apart, Gary. You obviously have to do some massaging of the other part of it because you wouldn't be raising as much money. My understanding is, in looking at the numbers, that by extending the sales tax to the various services, yet reducing the rate from 6.5% to 6%, you actually pick up or increase taxation burdens of about $480 million per year. Of course, the governor uses that money then to reduce income tax burdens, sales tax burdens to the 6%. Certainly, the car license tabs reductions in it would be a part of it, and property tax burdens. Gary, it would be fair to say you wouldn't be able to do it all, but it would also be fair to say that, you know, at a time you have a $3 billion surplus, to look at extending, expanding, raising taxes on some and to others, this might be the wrong message to be sending to the taxpayer citizens of the state.
Governor suggested, though, Mr. Speaker, that really, when all is said and done, the only people who are opposed to broadening the sales tax are lobbyists representing the special interests. They want to protect their own, of course. But if everybody would look at the big picture, they'd go along with the idea of, because, you know, it's kind of inherently unfair. He had a whole list of examples today where if you did one thing, you have to pay the tax now, another thing you don't have to, and he says it's kind of unfair the way it's set up.
Well, you know, the people who pay the tax are not lobbyists, and I have spoke to very, very few of the lobbyists that are concerned about the extension of the tax, but people who pay the tax are the actual consumers of services, whether that be getting a haircut, using an actuary service, using a law service, using a funeral service. You know, those are the people who pay the tax. So it's people who pay the tax, not lobbyists.
Do you think the sales tax is more fair than the income tax?
I think there are certain sales taxes that which can be more fair. Obviously, placing them on necessity items like food, clothing, prescription drugs that the governor has exempted, heating fuels, if he were to have done that, that would have been extremely unfair, extremely regressive. But the governor has spoke about not extending the sales tax to those type of goods or services.
So as long as... Oh, go ahead.
So it certainly is more fair than if those would have been included.
Go ahead, Mike.
Mr. Speaker, the governor seems to like the sales, the auto tab fees cap more than the legislature does. Is that something that might fall by the wayside here as the negotiations go on?
Yeah, Mike, and again, I'm going to carry the governor's bill, Mike, so I want you to know that we are going to give the courtesy to the governor from the House that the bill will be heard, that the speaker will carry his bill. That in fact it will be given open testimony and public input. We will be doing some massaging. You know, we'll be doing some changing of priorities. I think that's always done in the legislative process, and that's why we have a legislature separate from the executive branch. Having said that, Mike, I think it would be fair to say that as you look at the unraveling, the question that Gary mentioned earlier about, you know, extending sales tax, if that unravels, it unravels the whole package. I don't think it unravels the whole package. You have to make other choices, and one of those choices could be, you know, not putting money, additional money into reducing the car license tab.
So you are going to be fighting for the governor's plan while he's off broadcasting the XFL game?
Kind of ironic, isn't it? I think that he will be here to help some. I'm sure he'll help carry the bill somewhat.
Mr. Speaker, it looks like K-12 education is getting the short end of the stick here. Just some targeted money the first year of the biennium, and then a fairly small increase the second year. I was noting talking to the governor earlier, and we noted that we had some educators on a couple of weeks ago who said, gosh, you know, just to kind of keep up and so on, we need an increase of about 10% in that basic per pupil aid formula. Well, the governor isn't proposing anything close to that. What do you think about the governor's proposal?
Well, and to be fair to the governor, Gary, what he is saying is we substantially increased funding to K-12 the last biennium. I think he used the number $1.3 billion, and I believe that's the number. Since that's put in the base, that money will be there again this biennium, this year, as well as it was there last year. So to be fair to the governor, he's saying, you know, substantial increases of the last year, which will be continued. Even having said that, when you look at the entire budget and you look where priorities were given or not given by the governor, on the spending side, you would honestly have to say that the governor did not highly prioritize education. And in fact, I think you'll see coming out of both the House and certainly out of the Senate a higher priority for education as we shift around the priorities and shift around the dollars from one program to another.
What about transportation?
Well, yeah, I was trying to get to the bottom line of the transportation number, even standing with our chairman of the committee, Carol Mulno, and we were not able quite to figure out where the dollars are in the transportation fund. It looks to us like the governor has put a substantial increase for transit into the transportation fund, but not much for roads and bridges. But again, that's one of those numbers we just haven't been able to get to the bottom to.
If you go searching for more money for education or transportation or what have you, what have you saw? Have you found anything in the governor's budget? Quick look, first glance, where you'd say, here's a target, here's an area that we think we want to cut that the governor wants to expand.
Well, I think, you know, when there are some obvious ones, although not big dollar items, big ticket items. You know, the expansion of the political contribution refund program, which costs $5 million, probably is not going to stand a high priority in the legislature. I can't imagine funding politicians at the same in their campaigns at the same time that you're not putting some priority to education. From the standpoint of the state government itself, there seemed to be a more of an increase for state government and state employees than there was for our education area or higher education. That priority will be changed. So there's going to be a couple right there, and a whole host of other smaller type of programs that the governor has that will probably be reprioritized, at least in the House.
Governor Ventura says he'd like you to finish up all of your work, including the capital bonding program, this year.
It sounds good to me.
And then go home and not come back next year. Is that possible? Are you interested in that?
Yes, that sounds very, very good to me, Gary. You know, from the standpoint of enhancing the citizen part-time legislature, if in fact we're supposed to be citizen part-time and not full-time legislators, it's a substantial move in the right direction. Now, I would have to caution as to whether we would be able to do that this first year. You know, that might be something you have to lead into in relationship to having your committees, your capital investment committees, go out and view projects around the state and view the bonding bill proposals that come forward. You don't want to go out and spend $700 million or $600 million in a bonding bill without having to been on the various campuses or at the institutions or at the transportation site without, you know, viewing the project and being able to make some wise judgments, therefore, from the actual being on site. So, you know, it's a goal that we're going to have. It, in all honesty, it may be something we have to work into 2 years and can plan and prepare for as opposed to doing it right away the first year.
Mr. Speaker, we're out of time, but I sure appreciate your joining us.
Gary, thank you so very, very much. And Mike, hope you have a great day.
You too.
Well, Mike Mulcahy, that does it for our coverage today. Thank you so much for joining us today on Midday. Always a pleasure.
Well, glad to do what we could from here, Gary. It was a fun, fun couple of hours.
Should be a lively discussion about the budget for the next, 5 months or whatever until May 20th. Is that the official date?
Well, I guess so. And last year they said they'd be done by Easter. So watch when they say they can get that bonding done this year, too.
Minnesota Public Radio's political editor Mike Mulcahy over at the Science Museum, where Governor Ventura today presented his budget proposal, his budget plan for the next 2 years. Well, that does it for our midday coverage today, special edition today. As always, our producer, Sarah Meyer, and our assistant producer, Kara Figenshue. Engineering assistance today from Scott Liebers and Steve Griffith. I'm Gary Eichen. Thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you'll be able to join us tomorrow at 11 for tomorrow's midday.
I'm Lorna Benson. Governor Ventura has promised a 2-year budget plan that is long on tax cuts and short on spending. We'll have the details on the next All Things Considered weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. We have a partly cloudy sky and 25 degrees, wind chill 14 degrees at KNWF.